Today's episode is brought to you by Wise, the account that helps you manage your money around the world, which is huge for travelers. I've been a customer and a fan for 10 years. The Wise account helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, and they do it all without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This service has been so critical for me in my life as a traveler, as a nomad, as somebody living abroad. And you can join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account can help you out on the road at wise.com/travel. That's Wise, WISE.com/travel, or download the app. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at nissanusa.com.
For me, a retreat is a transformative travel experience. So it's a travel experience that has a certain degree of structure and intentional, meaningful experiences. It is about traveling not just without to see a new place, to go to a new location, but also traveling within. It can be a group experience, or retreats can also be solo, but they are curated, they're intentional, and they intentionally take you out of your comfort zone into learning or evolving into something new.
That was today's guest, Nina Butler, who has used travel in her own life as a means for transformation, going from a high school dropout to working and sailing around the world on private yachts at 16 years old, to eventually getting a PhD in philosophy, becoming a yoga instructor, and launching her business, InRetreat.co, which crafts immersive, transformative travel experiences designed to open the mind and expand the heart. Figuring out how to harness the power of travel to transform is what she does. And today, you're going to hear how you can do that for yourself as a solo traveler, or how you can facilitate a retreat for a group. It's all coming right now. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here. And welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, what's up? It's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. And look, every trip doesn't have to transform your life, but somehow, sometimes, they can't help themselves. And there can be those trips that kind of sneak up and unexpectedly create this transformation in your life. And sometimes you want to set the framework for that. You perhaps want to set some intentions around going into a retreat type setting on a journey and being able to come out of it with perhaps the next version of yourself, whatever that means to you, or some insights or some direction for what you're planning on doing next. A lot can come out of these types of things when you have that intentionality behind it, which is something that Nina talks about today. Some powerful concepts she shares in this conversation: the gap of potential and neutrality that can free you from your thoughts. We talk about fostering gratitude for difficult experiences. Just a lot going on. And Nina's story, which is amazing, as you heard at the top, going from a high school dropout to working on private yachts and traveling the world. Plenty to unpack. I know you're going to love this conversation. Stick around on the back end. I've got a trivia question. How many schools of philosophy do you think there are? The answer contains a serendipitous travel twist. One last thing, ZeroToTravel.com/newsletter. Free weekly newsletter goes out. You can sign up over there for that. And Nina's website, InRetreat.co. You can check out her work there. Now, without further ado, here's my conversation with Nina, and I'll see you on the other side, my friend. Thanks for listening.
One more question.
Yes.
If we're talking and I realize that I've gone off on a tangent, you're obviously post-editing everything, so I can say,
Oh, we love tangents here.
Okay. Because I'm a tangent. I can get very carried away on one, you know, one minor sideline aspect and then have to like haul it back. So I can kind of say, okay, back to the question, and you can edit stuff out, right? You're going to edit.
This is, I'm not editing any of this. This is, this is happening right now. You're actually in the show right now. You're screwed. No, I mean, you're a tangent kind of gal. We like tangents here.
Okay.
The thing about the podcast is there's no limit to the conversation, right? Although we do have some things to talk about today about retreats and transformative experiences in the retreat setting. The advice you're going to share here with all your experience, which we'll get into in a minute, is going to really apply to a couple different people. One, the person that wants to like plan maybe these experiences either as a business or for their friends, which is also a really cool thing to be an organizer. Or, you know, you can, I think of this as a solo traveler as well. If this is something you want to consider going on or something, you may want to take some of the advice you share and apply it to your own trip. So you can create some of these frameworks for yourself as a solo traveler as well. Anyway, I should say you're a new friend, and I want to formally welcome you to the show. So, Nina Butler, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
Thank you, Jason. So lovely to be here.
You mentioned your company. We can just let people know where they can find your work because you run retreats. You're a yoga instructor, and you facilitate these transformative experiences, and you've been doing this for a while, so let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, so the website is inretreat.co.
Yeah.
And I've been teaching yoga for 15 years. I also have a PhD in philosophy. So I apply experiences in both thinking, structural thinking, and creating ways in which people can get out of their minds, open their minds, and think in their bodies.
And you also bought me a cinnamon bun.
I did,
thank
yes.
You.
And so that's a way in which your tummy can think now for you.
I should describe the setting. This is a pleasure because I don't always get to do in-person interviews. We're sitting here together at a cafe in downtown Oslo. Beautiful day. It's lovely. So thank you for meeting me here. I'm sure people detect an accent. So you want to let people know where you're from because you have a really interesting, to me, as a guy who grew up in the suburbs in Philadelphia, suburban kid, you have a really interesting background and childhood experience. So,
yeah. Thanks. Yeah. So I'm from South Africa, grew up in a place in South Africa most people have never heard of, which is legitimately called Welkom. And it's in the middle of the country, pretty much nothing there other than mines, gold mines and millie fields, corn fields.
Okay.
My parents are a melange between English, Irish, and Swedish.
Okay.
Immigrants to South Africa, and I grew up in South Africa. And I left in 2005 to work on yachts. I dropped out of school at about 15, and then did my own A levels correspondence through the British International College, and then went to work on yachts in the Mediterranean, which was way better than the last year
of
school.
Like most 16-year-olds,
yeah.
Right?
Just so much better than staying in school. And and then that led to other experiences in culinary, viticulture, and other travel experiences, including quite a lot in New Zealand, working on vineyards in New Zealand. And so was that for a couple of years, and then went to university back in South Africa. And that turned into a longer academic project. And in 2017, when I had finished with that and decided I did not take myself seriously enough to be an academic and wanted to be part of the real world, I started my own business, which was combining my love for yoga and travel. And it was enabling yoga teachers around the world to set up their own online business and online platform to help them to share online videos. And I know from a post-COVID world, you're probably like, oh, wow, how original. but in 2017, there wasn't a lot of that. So yeah, that led me to Amsterdam, to the startup world in Amsterdam. And then, as business projects often do, there were a couple of turns on the in the road, and that flowered into a retreat business. So instead of people doing yoga online from different places, it is in-person immersive experiences in different places.
I mean, okay. It's not every day I talk to a high school dropout who has a PhD in philosophy. Is that, I mean, because you dropped out of school. How did that go over with?
My parents.
Yeah.
Terribly.
Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have two older brothers, and my oldest brother is very A-type, and he loved school, and I feel like it was the greatest gift he ever gave me was for him to love school and thrive at school, because the pressure by the time I
because you were the third.
I was the third.
Yeah. That's when everybody's tired of parenting.
Exactly. My parents were just like...
Just slip under the radar.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I'm very strong-willed. So as my mother says now, you have to know your child. And there was no point in fighting and arguing with me. And the compromise was that I did the O&A levels through the British International College. So a correspondence. So that I did get a school leaving certificate. Even though I... dropped out of formal school, and I was in boarding school, remember? So because my parents lived in the middle of nowhere, I was sent to an all-girls boarding school.
That's kind of how it works there, right? Because I just recently met somebody from Kenya, or I don't know, all over the place, but it sounds like in some of these rural areas, it's like the only option is to kind of get sent away to school.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. If I wasn't sent to boarding school, I would have had to do my high schooling in Afrikaans, which is not my mother tongue.
Yeah, okay.
And
that would have been difficult.
And yeah, exactly. And my parents just thought it was better for me to go to a boarding school, and they sacrificed a huge amount financially in order to do that.
But how old were you when you did that?
11.
So, and then you're living away from home at a school, because I've heard some bad stories about these places.
Yes.
They can be really strict, and it can be traumatic.
Yep.
All of these things. You're away from your parents at 11 years old. Like,
Yeah, that's really...
You know, how was that for you?
I found it incredibly difficult. Just before I was first went to boarding school, my grandmother, who was very close with, died at home. And that was a very traumatic experience. And I was then sent to boarding school. And honestly, they just weren't equipped to deal with students who needed extra care and parenting, and not just sort of discipline and the great education that they were giving me, but they just weren't equipped to deal with the kind of the grief and the post-traumatic stress that I was living through.
They weren't considering your individual situations in life.
No, they just didn't have the capacity. The way the boarding school was set up to run and function, they didn't. So I developed eating disorders, anxiety, insomnia. I got lockjaw. I had so much... pent up.
Oh my gosh.
It was a really tough time. And that was part of my motivation for leaving school, of course. And that was part of also my parents thinking in terms of supporting me in that, because it was clear that I wasn't thriving where I was.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That sounds awful, actually. That sounds like something that it must still stick with you in ways. Do you think it's...
Yeah, I mean, I think like any difficulty, it molds you and it leads you to new or different paths, and you really have a choice. So do you succumb to it, or do you develop from it and grow with those challenges?
Right.
And one thing that that I would say I'm incredibly thankful for those experiences was that it led me to yoga. So I realized that if I was going to deal with these the anxiety disorders and the eating disorders that I developed, that the only person who really was going to deal with that and develop a healthy relationship with myself and habit patterns in my life, the only one who's going to actually do that is me.
Yeah.
And no matter how many psychologists or centers or whatever you go to, at the end of the day, and I'm not knocking the industry or whatever, but for me, I realized somewhere down the line that actually, like, the only one who's really responsible and accountable for this is me. And I know what's going on in my mind and how that's making me sick. And I need to learn how to better observe my mind and to manage the negative thought patterns that are then proliferating. You know, they say your thoughts become your words become your deeds, and your deeds become your habits, and your habits are the fabric of your life. The fact that I turned to yoga and actually Vipassana meditation, which is a Buddhist form of meditation, apparently it was the type of meditation performed by Siddhartha, the first Buddha, and it was kept in a very original and authentic form in Burma for thousands of years, and then was in monasteries. And then was, this is a tangent, and then unearthed by Goenka, a Buddhist monk, in about the 1970s. And anyway, they've now set up these amazing centers around the world, Vipassana centers, that are totally free to go to, which is incredible.
Vipassana,
yeah.
Okay. I just talked to somebody that one-on-one. It's like they're free, and then you have to be quiet, like, You have to meditate 12 hours a day or something for 10 days?
Yeah, a vow of silence. The formal course is 10 days. They do have like 1 day or 3 day things now as well. And you take a vow of silence. It's just a lot of discipline. You wake up at 4 in the morning. The one I went to outside Cape Town was like cold showers in winter early in the morning. And lots of discipline, a lot of hours in meditation. And it was damn hard. But the point is that it started, I'm not, you know, like here to tout and promote that as the only form of meditation or the only answer, but it's what I found at the right time.
How old were you when you did that?
The first one I did was I was 19, first course I went to.
And would you say that was the first experience you had where, not that you weren't aware of some of these things that happened in your past and like that, but was that the thing that kind of brought it really to the forefront for you, or had you been kind of...
I'd been doing yoga, like, so there's... I had been doing the practice of asana, so yeah, physical, like, asana for... I'd been around it for a lot of my life because my mother did it since she was about 14.
Oh, okay.
She was a preggy yoga mom. And so I was very used to the idea of yoga, but in school and being a teenager, I was just like into sports and all kinds of other stuff. And so I was familiar with the practice of yoga and in a broad sense, but Vipassana was the first time that I actually started to understand what mind body experiences were about and mind body practices were about. And I first started to grapple with the idea of being able to observe your mind and observe your thought patterns.
Being the witness, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. And the gap between your thoughts and the observer. And that gap is a gap of potential. That is a gap of potential and neutrality. So it's a potential to be able to observe and therefore not be victim to your thoughts, and so it's not about then in reverse controlling them, but about not reacting to them. There's a gap of neutrality there, and then Vipassana was the first time that I came to experience that for myself and understand that, and understand what it means to observe your breath, observe your mind, and to drip, to percolate into your body, and how powerful that is for you to connect with your truth and your rhythms, your feeling, your being.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's interesting you said the gap, because I had not thought of the gap until I went on this recent retreat, and then we were on this post-retreat call, and they were asking me different questions and stuff. And I said, you know, I think I'm spending more time in this gap. I hadn't really thought too much about it as a gap before, but I like that because I'm visual. So I can imagine this moment, what happens between where you feel like, let's say a negative, I don't want to say a negative emotion, but you don't want to like, you don't necessarily
strong deny emotion.
Yeah. You don't want to necessarily deny your emotions because you're a human, but at the same time, acting on them in a certain way is not healthy, I feel. And so this ability to spend more time in this gap between like a rising emotion and deciding what you're going to do with it, instead of just it rolling right into the emotional response, it's like if there's the ability to just kind of widen that space just a tad, gives you even just a split second to kind of process and understand how do I want to be like as a human in this moment.
Yeah.
Like I have this emotion I'm feeling. How do I want
to
handle it?
Yeah,
what's a good way to handle it?
Exactly. And, to take ownership of how you're acting and how you're being in the world. And to draw that back to the eating disorders on a granular level, I was able to start to understand what it meant to have negative thought. Like I had a backing track in my mind that I wasn't even aware of repeated things. You know, we tell ourselves the same stuff over and over again. And repeated things I was telling myself in the back of my mind, most of the time not even aware of. And those words, those things I was telling myself were having physical reactions in my body. So for like tightening of the chest or butterflies in the stomach or, you know, curling in of the shoulders. I was having physical reactions.
You were noticing the loop and then noticing
how I was physically reacting to things I was telling myself. And those physical reactions are both like movements, muscular things happening in the body, but they're also, when I talk about like a butterfly in the stomach, that's also talking about an emotion, because an emotion is both, you know, abstract and the mental, but it's also always physical. There's always a physical change in the body. You can't feel something without it also being somewhere on your body. Some change, even if it's minor, like a tingling in the skin or something like that, there's always a minor flutter, fluctuation, change in the breath or in the body. And so the practice of Vipassana for me, or any meditation, is a practice of starting to see those patterns play out and to start to understand them. And once you see them, whatever it is, I gave an example of what it was for me, it might be a different process for somebody else. But once you're able to see that, you can then isolate where you're really going wrong, where the harm is happening, like where the disjunctures are, and then you can deal with it instead of just feeling like hopeless that you've got this compulsion and this terrible loop of behavior that you can't get out of, which is, you know, what you feel like when you're in that circumstance, when you have a disorder like that, when you're ill in that way. And instead of that hopelessness and that unknown of like, why do I do this? Why can't I change? Why am I doing this to myself? Instead of feeling that way, you can actually say, okay, this is the process. Look, I go from that thought to that physical, emotional, psycho-emotional reaction. And then that leads me to start to do this type of thing. And I can map it. So if I can map it, then I can understand how to practically intervene on that process.
Yeah. Wow. Mapping yourself.
Yeah.
Bringing it back to travel.
Back to travel. Yeah, sorry.
No, it's good though.
Yeah.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries. Plus, it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something. And it makes an incredible gift. Under 50 bucks. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. I was going to ask you if you've ever experienced, like, I've had these moments in my life where I feel like, you know, I'm talking two or three, where I felt like something happened where there was going to be a big change in my life. And then I had like these physical sort of, what I can only describe as like an energetic reaction. I don't know if it was like a panic attack or if it's like something else. And it's happened recently. This is going to sound weird. I was trying to tell my wife, like, but I feel like there's like an energetic alignment going on in my body. Is that a thing?
Yeah. Yeah. So can you explain like what, so what, give me an example of what you would.
I mean, it's just like this feeling where there's a big change.
Yeah.
There's a transformation that's going to really change things. And maybe like a tightness, like an anxiety, but also like a, it's just feeling sort of, yeah, like tingly,
yeah.
I guess, and
yeah.
these types of things and sort of unsettled in a lot
mm-hmm.
of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like not necessarily a good feeling, not like a, oh yeah. Now,
yeah.
Like I know that the transformation or the decision's right, but something's off, like in my body, like it's like my body hasn't caught up to the decision or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, look, one thing I can say is we are all energy. That is just, you know, on a quantum mechanical
right,
level.
Right.
And the
That's
basis,
just a fact.
The truth.
That's a scientific
it's just
fact,
a
yeah.
fact. We are pulsing, vibrating energy. We are a mass of vibrating energy. And we're more space than we are anything else. So
that's hard to conceive because I'm looking
yeah.
at you. You're here.
Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so on a physical level, we're more water than we are any of, like we're 70%. Say people say, oh, we're 70% water. True. We are like a big balloon. But if you imagine that balloon filled with water, you say 70%, but it's like 90% on a quantum mechanical level is actually just gaps between space,
yeah,
nothing.
Right.
And on in Ayurveda, which is the school of thought, the umbrella school of thought that yoga and what we know as yoga and asana arises from, you could call it traditional philosophy from the northern part of the Himalayas in India. So Ayurveda talks about how there are five elements, and the fifth element, so it'd be water, fire, earth, air, and the fifth element is ether. And ether is the glue in Ayurvedic philosophy for all other elements, and it is the most abstract, but it is also the most sort of foundational, and that space anyway is pregnant with energy. It's pregnant with mm-hmm. with information.
Yeah,
and it's what binds us. It's what connects
yeah.
us.
If you're like these guys are getting woo woo here, I'll use a real example. You could tell me if this is correct. I mean, we've all been in a place where if a certain person walks in the room. And the energy completely shifts, maybe in a bad way, maybe in a good way.
Yeah.
That's yeah. part of the glue.
Absolutely.
I think, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
If there was a separation, it wouldn't feel so powerful.
Absolutely. And we talk about, it's in our everyday colloquial language, we talk about vibes, good vibes. We're not vibing
right.
bad. And that's
right.
what we're talking
we're
about.
We're having good vibes
we're
here.
Good
we're
vibes.
Vibing. We're vibing. All right. So going back to your 16-year-old self, or 15 or 16, something around there.
15, I left school, and 16, just before my 17th birthday, I went off sailing.
Because I have a daughter, and I'm just thinking, oh my gosh. I mean, I don't know my 16-year-old daughter, but
yeah.
thinking about, okay, bye, have fun, you know, sailing around the world at 16 years old. What?
Yeah.
Okay, what a learning experience, I'm sure, and for anybody curious of what the lifestyle of travel is like in that industry, what you did, like what it was like for you, and just the, yeah, just a bit about the experience, whatever you want to share here. Maybe how it, this is, I shouldn't do this. I'm doing multiple questions at once.
It's okay. Yeah.
I just want to hear about the experience and maybe how it impacted you.
So I did a coastal skipper's course in Durban on the east coast of South Africa.
Why did you pick this? You could have picked anything. You
I know. It's
you
very
wanted to
random.
Travel.
It's, I wanted to travel, and I guess I probably read or saw or heard something about it being a great way to travel.
Because you didn't grow up around boats or anything like that.
No, I grew up in the middle of South Africa.
Right.
And
no
I'd
boats.
Never
no
been sailing before.
Right.
But I do
seasick.
Love, I did know that I love the ocean. And yeah. I guess, you know, I've always had an affinity for wide open spaces, like massive vistas. And it's one of the things that I absolutely love and miss about the savannah in Southern Africa is the sense of expanse where the sky just feels so huge. And you don't get that in Europe.
You yeah, because you live here, we should mention. We didn't mention yeah, you live in Oslo.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, you just don't get that that feeling. And anyway, I imagined that being on a boat in the ocean would be the most extreme feeling of this endless expanse, and yeah. and it is.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I guess I had probably read or seen or heard somewhere that it was a great way to work and travel together, yeah. as without needing, you know, and there's various sides of the industry. I mean, on the big yachts, you have, like, you know, staff, everyone from deckhands, hostesses, chefs.
Have you seen the reality show?
People keep on telling me about it, but I really haven't.
You know what? I never binge those yeah. shows because they're yeah. garbage, but yeah. I did yeah. binge it. I forget what it's called now. It's called...
I don't know. Crew? Something crew? Or
yeah, something crew. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah,
it's supposed
I've
to give you the... Because I was curious about what the experience was,
yeah.
because I haven't gotten
yeah.
to live it.
So, when I finished the course, I was actually immediately offered a job, and that was for a very specific reason. And that's because I had then a coastal skipper's license, so I could officially, you know, be at the helm and skipper a sailing yacht. But I also, over the course, showed myself to be interested in and adept at cooking in the galleys of the boat. And I was on a sailing... Obviously, the sailing course was... all guys. I was the only girl on the course. And
that's awesome.
And so I was sharing a boat with five other guys, 18-year-old, 19-year-old boys. And as part of the course, we sailed up the east coast of Southern Africa to Maputo, to Mozambique, and then across to some of the islands off the coast of Mozambique. And on that trip, we were on the edge of a tropical cyclone. It was Tropical Cyclone Ernest, and we got into some seriously bad weather. And I had, there were photos and, you know, tales of me being down in the galley, like strapped to the galley, putting together a meal to keep everyone alive.
Wow.
But I also really enjoyed cooking it sounds ridiculous and corny now, the only girl like in the galley or whatever, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
and to be honest, it was better food than any of them could have put together. So it's because of that that I was offered
the
job.
You're like, I'm not eating your cheese sandwiches.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Another two-minute noodle meal. No
and
thanks.
So was it a good way to see the world?
Yes.
Or some of the world, I should say?
Yes. So I was offered this job, and it was on a small, relatively small boat, a 50-footer, and it was privately owned, and the owner was on the boat. And so the requirement was that he, because it was a smaller boat, needed somebody who was adept at sailing, could sail, and cook for him. And so that was the offer. And then the other practical thing is I have a British passport, not just a South African passport.
Right.
And yeah. so that helped in terms
of... So this was really perfect for you.
It yeah. was just it was just pure luck.
Yeah.
And so the experience was, it was incredibly enriching. We did sail quite a bit, but I got onto the boat in February in the south of Spain, and the owner was not entirely decided on where he wanted to go.
I like his style.
Yeah. we sailed through the Straits of Gibraltar to the coast of Morocco and down the coast of Morocco for a bit of time. And then back up through along Costa del Sol, Costa Blanca, and then went to the Balearic Islands.
This must have been so exciting.
It was so exciting.
As a 16-year-old.
And I had a lot of autonomy, really, in terms of running the boat, which was great. So I had to learn a lot. It was good and bad. I mean, the owner was also not good at his... if we were doing a longer crossing at night, I can remember being like left there doing the graveyard shift when he really should have been doing doing the watch. It was
took
very
a bit of advantage of work ethic.
Exactly. But I mean, if you own the boats, I mean, I guess you can.
I guess so, yeah.
I'm not trying to paint that as a scary or bad thing. I mean, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And then by May, we had then sailed through Messina on the east coast of Sicily and the Italian mainland and sailed through there and around the boot of Italy. And we were in Brindisi on the heel of the boot of Italy. And then that owner of the boat wanted to go back to the UK. I jumped ship. It's such a long story, but basically there was this beautiful Australian 60-foot custom-built Beneteau that came into the marina, and that morning South Africa and Australia had played a rugby match, and I'd managed through my broken Italian, morning being because it was played in Australia, managed with my broken Italian to watch the match at a ristorante nearby that was actually closed, and South Africa had won, and I saw the Australian flag and I went over to gloat and they were so lovely and they were like, come on board for a Campari, and then three Camparis later they were like, okay love, you're joining us, because they heard that the owner of the first boat I was on was going back to the UK and basically wanted to leave me to look after the boat in Brindisi for about a month or two.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, oh, that's a bit boring.
I don't you love serendipity like that?
Exactly. And they were so lovely. And they had guests on board all the time. It was a bigger boat. And so I was doing more of the entertaining and the cooking that I loved, as well as sailing this beautiful yacht.
And so you're just on the next boat and off around?
And we went, we sailed across to the Adriatic coast and we're around Croatia for about 2.5 months and then down to the Ionian Islands, around the south of the Greek mainland and the north of the Peloponnese. We were in the Kyklades for 2.5 months and then the Dodecanese, which are the Turkish version of the Kyklades, for two months until the end of that year. And it was amazing. Their guests were wonderful. They had owned a publishing company in Sydney for years and then had sold their publishing company and bought this boat. And they had like a wealth of stories and good vibes and great guests.
Incredible.
But this experience is quite unique in the sense they were small boats. And that's the point I think it's important to make, is there are jobs like this where you get on in it and you're basically one of two or three or the only crew.
Yeah.
And you really treat it as part of the family.
Okay.
And that's how I was treated. I didn't have to wear a uniform. And if they went exploring.
This is like a sub industry within the yachting
industry.
You weren't doing the Below Deck is the name of the show, by the way.
Yes.
You weren't doing that where it's a crew. You're
a crew of 20 and you've and your silver service and things like that.
Yeah.
No, but I saw those boats. I remember we sailed past.
I'm glad I'm not doing that.
We sailed past Armani's boat when we were leaving Mallorca, and there were two helicopter pads at the back of the super yacht.
It was,
and all the crew were like walking around in their like shades of silver and gray uniform, looking very swish.
You're just like, stop it right now. Just stop right now. No, I mean, all right. So just going back to that moment, I just want to point this out, because if you're able to give yourself the gift of that type of freedom where you're traveling, like any point in life, doesn't matter what age you are now. I just love that idea. And I've been in those situations where, like, you know, you're just out and you really like can do anything and you think you're going to the UK one day. And then like 2 hours later, you're on to the next thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is that to me is one of the best parts of travel in
totally.
That way, is just that not knowing and being able to just have that freedom to just take the next path or the next thing and really just let it organically guide
evolve.
You around the world.
Exactly.
What a gift. If you can give yourself that gift of like complete freedom at any point in your life, even for a limited time, it's so worth taking that and grabbing onto it.
And being open to things. Yes. That's the thing. We don't even realize how closed we are to opportunities most of the time.
That's
because we
true.
Have such strong preconceived ideas of how we want things to turn out,
right,
and how we are going to measure the next experience. But if you let go of those expectations, this is a big yoga lesson. If you let go of those expectations and open yourself up to a new experience and just allow things to unravel moment by moment, there's magic everywhere.
How long were you traveling around the world? Did you go to New Zealand?
Yes,
work at the wineries after that?
Because
that's a 2-year visa type of thing, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Where you can work on farms and Australia,
yeah,
New Zealand. Were you doing that?
Yeah,
or?
So some of the guests on board invited me then. They said, come to New Zealand next
another
year.
Sort of, here we go. I'm just,
exactly.
Okay, I guess I'm doing this
they
now.
They were like, we own a boat in Auckland. It's based at West Haven Marina in Auckland, and we have a vineyard at Lake Taupo. And so why don't you come next year and you can look after our boat in the summer and then come for the pruning season at the vineyard in winter. And they also had a publishing company. So I also managed, whilst I was working on the boat and looking after their boat in Auckland Marina, to do an internship in their publishing company in Auckland. So
okay,
I would look after the boat in the morning and then go for a couple of hours in the afternoon for an intern experience with their publishing company, which was just amazing. And I have a love for literature and books, partly because of my upbringing, my parents, but also through that experience of the two amazing couples that had achieved a lot in their lives and I really looked up to, and opened their very privileged and wow, amazing world to me, but also loved books and ideas.
Yeah.
And
right.
sharing ideas,
yeah,
and had such great sense of adventure as well.
Learning so much, I'm sure,
yeah,
just through the experiences and the conversations. And
absolutely.
How long were you bouncing around the world in this way? I imagine you were going back visiting your parents at certain points. I mean,
yes, I did. It was that time before I started university. That whole section was 3 years.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I decided, okay, I need to get a degree. And honestly, in hindsight, one thing I've really learned is I probably didn't. I would have been good to carry on without, but I did feel like I needed to then get a degree and go. And I wanted to actually do travel journalism.
Yeah.
And so I applied to go to the university in South Africa it's the top sort of media studies center in Africa, and that's Rhodes University. They have a very acclaimed journalism department, and I went to Rhodes to study journalism because I wanted to be a travel journalist. But within a week of being there, I realized that actually, if I'm going to be a good journalist, I should learn about the world, not about journalism. So I decided to do history and philosophy and English instead of journalism studies.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have some questions on philosophy, but we'll get to those later. We should talk retreats. I mean,
yeah,
we got a whole bunch of stuff to come. Thank you for sharing all that. That's really cool to hear about more about your life. I know there are loads of more stories in there, so they'll come out over time, I'm sure, as we continue to get to know each other. Tell everybody why you're in Norway again.
I'm in Norway because, I live here. It's a very boring reason why I'm in Norway. I'm in Norway because my husband works for a Norwegian technology company.
Yeah, okay.
Because
he's not from here either.
No, we're both South African, and
yes,
we were living in Amsterdam, and then running a retreat business, I can be based anywhere.
Yes.
So when he was like, hey, should we move to Norway? It was, I had no reason to say
no.
And
you don't know how long you're going to be here for.
No, we don't. Although, let me tell you, it has not been easy for me to get residency here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Post Brexit British passports, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure those of us in the world who are on a British passport trying to live in Europe in Europe post Brexit will resonate with the difficulties that have arisen.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian
course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected. And I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning. And you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled BABBEL.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listener, it's Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show.
This you sent over and advanced a little bit of info. I know the general topics, but we're looking at this as kind of how to curate epic transformative travel retreats. And I kind of framed it up on the top. You can pull out you've been doing this for how long? Curating, creating these type of
since 2016.
Okay, yeah. So many, many years. Just pull out what makes sense for you, whether you're the organizer, solo traveler, or whatever. You've been designing this, over past 7 years. So I love that you kind of defined what a retreat is. I think that's pretty important because it really sets the context for the entire conversation, all the advice you're going to share. So you want to just kind of lay that out for us?
Absolutely.
It might sound like a silly question, but I think it's, you know.
No, I think it's an important question because there is a lot of confusion and it's become such a big industry and people have ideas of what a retreat is and I think it's worth defining, right?
Yeah, great.
So for me, a retreat is a transformative travel experience. So it's a travel experience that has a certain degree of structure and intentional, meaningful experiences. It is about traveling not just without to see a new place, to go to a new location, but also traveling within.
Okay.
It can be a group experience or retreats can also be solo, but they are curated, they're intentional, and they intentionally take you out of your comfort zone into learning or evolving into something new.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you share some advice on setting an intention for something like that? Because I think that I was struggling with that on a retreat I went with. And I was like, am I going to be able to get this down? I wanted to get it down to some snappy sentence or whatever. And then there was this balance between setting an intention that really resonated with me, but also making sure that I didn't have too many expectations around that because I knew other things would happen or other things might come up and it would be an ever evolving situation. And so, you know, maintaining the openness, but still having the intention, but not having the expectation, the mindset basically.
Yeah.
And maybe this is for somebody, you know, they're thinking about going to retreat or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you want, when you're getting into a retreat, as you described, You are probably going to have some kind of intention, like, and maybe that intention is as simple as I'm just creating some time for myself and we'll see what happens. And it could be that. But
yeah,
I'm just curious what your advice was on this.
I mean, there is never somebody who books a retreat who's just like, I'm going on vacay. There's always something behind it. So whether it's they're in a juncture in their life, like between jobs, or they've just been through a separation, or they are exhausted, or there's always, or they're trying to change their career. There's always something else. There's a layer beneath the trip.
Yeah.
And so there's an intention that people come with that sometimes they don't even, I think, consciously verbalize or realize that is related to something contextual in their life. Some juncture, something is happening that in their life that they're seeking a little bit of extra inspiration, meaning, answers, rest, depth. So there's that. But then there can also be an intention, like when you get there, an intention on the level of like, okay, what do I want to get out of the next 5 days? So there could be intention of like, I'm in this phase of deciding what I want to do with my life. I'm changing my career and I'm not quite sure what it is. So there's that deeper contextual thing. But there can also be intention of like, over the next 5 days, I actually just want to live moment by moment. Like that could be, I want to cultivate.
That's really nice.
Truly, I want to cultivate presence. So there could also be an immediate like, a localized intention as well as a contextual intention.
Okay.
And I think intentions are very important because they help to give us direction to steer the ship. But then indeed, as you say, that openness and that you have to also maintain the sense of openness, this almost surrendering of the outcomes. So you set the intention, but then you surrender to the direction in which the experience will go.
Yeah.
And that's when you allow yourself to be taken up in serendipity, in wonder. I love the word wonder. Wonder at things, to wonder at the world. And you can't be overcome with wonder, with awe, if you're like, 2 o'clock, get there, you know, or I need to do X, Y, Z. Wonder only happens when there's an opening and an allowing.
Yeah.
Definitely, intentions are important, but then that sense of openness. And I think what's important for me and what defines a retreat is that there is some form of mind-body experience or connection that happens on a regular basis, on a daily basis. For me, it's on my retreats, there's yoga and meditation. And the reason why that's important is because it can be very hard for us to feel that sense of connection with the ground, with the earth, where we are, to feel the openness. What I'm trying to say is to feel that sense of openness and that wonder, you often need to first ground yourself to feel where you are, to be where you are truly before you're open to things.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And the practice of doing yoga, or maybe it's a different form of meditation, or maybe it's kung fu or whatever. It's not important. I'm not, evangelical about any particular mind-body practice.
Yeah.
But something that at the start of the day enables you to just come into body, to be there, to feel yourself, to feel the earth, to spread your toes. And that becomes the foundation for you then to open in wonder.
Yeah. You're right. Wonder is a spectacular word. And isn't that what we live when we're living those, when we're just traveling as travelers? I feel like that the wonder opens up because we are open and we're seeing things in a new way. And the way you described sort of the intention and the grounding and sort of the aspects of that, it's really beautiful because you can do that just like today
totally.
Or tomorrow morning.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't have to be on a retreat. I mean, but like, I'm going to live moment by moment today to the best of my ability.
Totally.
And I mean, do you wake up and do you have a daily intention?
Yes, I have daily practice of meditation and most days yoga as well.
Yeah.
But every morning I do at least 10 minutes of meditation. Some days it can only be 10 minutes and sometimes it's an hour.
Yeah.
I actually am not good at rules. I'm not a rule-bound, rigid person. But I always sit down. I always turn up.
Yeah.
For myself.
Okay, yeah.
And then I see where it goes. And when you said now about how you could do this today, this experience of grounding and being open, I absolutely resonate with that. And the greatest thing for me to hear after a retreat is when people say, since your retreat, I've been doing yoga every day, or since your retreat, I've felt so much calmer and I've kept up that practice that we did in the morning of watching the sunrise. One of the greatest things that you do on a holiday to that point is watch sunsets and sunrises.
Mm.
That's a practice of meditation in itself. That's a practice of grounding.
Mm.
And so when I hear people say, oh, we did this on a retreat and I've kept it up in my daily life, that's the best thing to hear.
Yeah. That's gold right there.
Yeah.
Of course, doing that today is something you can do, but also there is something special about kind of what you're talking about and what we're going to get into in terms of advice the like removing your physical body from your normal surroundings, going somewhere, traveling, and people that listen to this love to travel, so you already get that built in, and then creating that space or that container to have a transformative experience so you're away from all of the sort of regular daily things, you're not distracted by that, and you're setting, and that's part of it too, I think, right? You're setting aside the space for yourself to explore this thing where it can be difficult. You maybe in theory could do it at home. You could say, I'm going to spend the next 5 days doing yoga and meditating or doing kung fu or whatever, and I'm going to work on this one or two, I'm going to think about these one or two things about my life. And it's like, you know, that's not going to happen.
No.
Like, you know, you're going to get emails or something's going to happen. Your toilet's going to break and you're going to have to, you know, and then you're just going to be completely out of it. But when you're away, none of that crap can happen.
Yeah, so. Exactly. There's always the sense when you travel to a place, it's actually a multi-directional thing happening. So one is that you're physically going to a place. You're physically arriving in and waking up in the Serengeti. That's happening on the physical level. But you're also, this is why it's multidirectional, leaving behind something.
Right.
And what you're leaving behind is the person that you were up to that point in your everyday life. You're leaving behind your roles and responsibilities. Mm. You're leaving behind your to-do lists and the things that inevitably weigh us down in the everyday life. You're leaving behind that version of yourself and you're going to somewhere new. And so you're almost like creating a blank canvas or an open container for something transformative or new to happen because you've cleared away, you've left behind that stuff that you are in your everyday life. Mm. And if you stay where you are, yes, you can create calm, grounding, intentional weekends or whatever at home. And I think that's wonderful. But you're not leaving. You're not creating this open canvas for newness.
Yeah, right.
For the evolution. And I think there's something also incredibly, incredibly important about travel, which is that, and it's I think the biggest privilege is that you experience everyday things, a sunset, like it's the first.
Yeah, right.
You've seen however many thousands of sunsets, or they happen and we don't even notice them, or you've had how many dinners or cups of coffee or whatever, or met how many strangers. But when you do it in a completely new place, you have the privilege of it being and feeling like a first.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's a childlike excitement and, again, wonder that you just can't create in your everyday life.
Yeah. I love that. I agree. The ingredients that make a retreat epic and transformative, you sent over a couple of talking points we can go through around the practical side of this. What are those to you?
Yeah. So for me, the first is the right environment. So all of the retreats that I run are based in very beautiful nature, wilderness.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm against urban environments or anything like that, but for a retreat, for this deeper mind-body connect that we're talking about, there is something about a calmer nature-based environment.
Nature
that
gives
enables
us all something. Exactly. I mean, it's part of our nature.
Exactly. So the right calm nature-based environment. So the second super important thing is that all of the details of the trip are taken care of and organized. Travel can be exhausting and it can be stressful. And if you're worrying about the next meal or this travel and that, all the details.
It's using up bandwidth that you could be using.
And we can obsess about it and therefore neglect the other work that we need to and things we need to think about.
Right.
So all the details are taken care of and you literally can arrive and all the stuff is happening and you can focus on that important connection. Then that there is opportunity for both growth and rest. So talked about the mind-body practices. And all of the retreats I run are amazing, unique experiences and activities like hiking or calligraphy classes or like really supping fun activity stuff that takes you out of your comfort zone. That's exciting, but there also needs to be time for rest.
Yeah.
We live in such busy, productive lives, and there is a cult of productivity in our everyday, in our modern world.
Yeah.
And so intentional rest time, yeah. both cool stuff and nothing time. And that's super, super important.
The cult of productivity.
Yeah.
I like that.
Get it done.
It's true.
And then there also need to be experiences that tie you to the place. And that's because travel is a privilege. And there are so many amazing lessons that you learn from other ways of life, other cultures, other environments, other ecosystems. Yeah. And to go to a place and to say, oh, I went there for a retreat and I focused on my presence and grounding and whatever. But if you didn't do something that's specific to that place and connect with yeah. that and get to know that, well, then that's not being grounded or being authentic in your inner
yeah.
grounding.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the last ingredient is the wonder, the magic, the awe.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. That's a great list. Maybe this is more on the business side, but it could be if you're leading a group, friends or whatever. One of the questions you put out is, what does it mean to lead or guide a retreat? What are the type of things that can go wrong? And we're going to ask you about how you design them and price them if you do want to get into the retreat business. And that might be just a small subset of people listening. But I'm always curious about business aspects of things. And also sometimes when you hear those things, even if it's a different industry, you can still take some things from it and apply them to your own thing. But yeah, in terms of leading it, I'm guessing what you mean by this question is, how do you facilitate a transformative experience on mm-hmm. the ground mm-hmm. as an individual who's leading but needs to also get out of the way? Is that
absolutely.
Kind of
I think you're already answering what, you know, the question in saying get out the way. The point is that if you're leading a trip, a retreat, it's not about you.
Yeah.
And all too often, particularly in the yoga retreat, like part of retreats.
Yeah, okay.
There is a lot of focus on the teacher or the personality. You know, there are like yoga celebrities, for example, right. that will
I
do
mean,
a
that's
retreat.
I mean, that's the thing that can draw the people.
Oh, absolutely.
Know, yeah.
And in some cases, it's wonderful because that person is truly inspiring and magnetic.
Right.
And that's amazing. But it's important that if you're leading a group, even if you are that magnetic celebrity person, that you know how to get out of the way so that people have the capacity not just to mirror you, to mimic you, but to find their groove yeah, and to find right. their personal right. evolution, not right. just to follow yours.
Right.
And so it's very important to know how to switch off and be part of the group and not in front of the group.
Yeah, right.
To be participant.
Okay, yeah.
And it's also very important to acknowledge that you are not there to fix people. So there is a perception of retreats that people have that you sort of go on there to like sort out a problem or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely not ever my approach. I'm not psychologist right. or, you know, like right. I'm not there. That's definitely never the intention and not something that's promoted. It's about creating an environment that enables people to grow and answer things for themselves.
Yeah.
And that's a very big difference. And then another big thing is compassion. One like constant thing, every retreat I do, I always am struck by how people surprise you. You can never, ever read a book by its cover. Constantly, 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 people will surprise you. And you just never know what kind of they're going through, right?
Right?
And so you have to have that compassion. You can't like write people off. You got to let people be who they are and have a compassion for that so that they find a home within the group dynamic. And if you're like, discriminating or judging or, you know, saying this is what the in-group, this is how we part of this group or whatever, then you start to create cliques and schisms and that's not yeah, at all right. the intention.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then aligned to that, I always make sure in a group that I'm aware of power dynamics. So even though it could be a retreat of adults, amazingly, as adults, we still function...
Lord of the Flies.
Sorry, what about...
Lord of the Flies, right?
Yeah, we still function like teenagers in a group environment. Yeah. So there's the cool kids, the loud kids having the best time and becoming best friends. And then there's the quiet ones,
right?
They're the people that don't quite fit in. It happens every retreat. If there's 6 people or 60 people, the same dynamics. Yeah. And it's really important to acknowledge that the people that are the cool group, they're having the best time, they don't need you, and they are becoming like a power leaders within the group themselves. And you have to align yourself with the people that are on the side of that. And you've got to, and when I say align yourself, I mean, there is, if you're leading a group, you are holding a position of power, and those people that become loud and set the tone and are love, and I don't mean it in a negative way, they're having an amazing time and that's wonderful. They become a center of power as well. And so you can't hang out with those people in a basic, to put it basically, like you've got to make sure
that
you're sensitive. Sensitive to how power works in a group of humans, even though we're adults, and to tend to people that are a bit quiet, because some people who are on the margins are comfortable in that, and they love that, and they embrace that, and that's great. But sometimes they're uncomfortable in that. And then you've got to be sensitive to it.
It's a lot to balance.
By
the end of these, are you pretty tired?
Well, the last thing I was going to say is you've got to have fun. And that's energizing.
Yes.
So I put in a lot of work before the retreat starts. That's where all the like hard work happens.
Yeah.
So that when the retreat begins, I have the time and peace of mind to have fun. Because if I'm always like running around trying to organize stuff, then particularly the A types in the group are going to be like, oh, I should be working too, you know, or like, you know, you set a tone of anxiety, or you know, you're then not participating.
Right.
And so, yes, a very, very important thing is to have fun.
Okay. That sounds, I could do that.
Yeah.
give us just like destination wise.
Yeah.
Give me like your 2 or 3 favorite places, even 1 or 2 experiences that just come right to your head where it's like, it was just so magical in so many ways.
So the retreat that comes to mind first is in Kenya. So look, first of all, I have to say I am biased. Like Africa is my home.
Yeah.
So I'm biased, but this trip is just so mind-blowing. It's over 2 locations. The first is Amboseli National Park, which is this huge protected UNESCO protected wilderness area beneath Mount Kilimanjaro, which is the largest, highest peak in Africa. And so the whole of this wilderness area that has Big Five, it's a Big Five reserve, so Big Five animals. When you are viewing on your safari and viewing the animals, the backdrop is the snow-capped peak of Mount Kilimanjaro. So that in itself is just...
so lame.
So wild.
So lame.
And so to get there, you've got to get in these small... So it begins in Nairobi. And to get there, you've got to get in these small 8-seater propeller safari planes. And so the guests arrive, and I go sort of a day early. And when they touch down on this airstrip beneath Mount Kilimanjaro, I'm waiting there with the safari guides. They touch down the small propeller plane, and there's like elephant, giraffe around Mount Kilimanjaro, and the adventure begins.
Yeah.
And it is... first part of the trip is there and the bush safari, incredible animal sightings. We also do, I don't want to give away too many, there's like special moments that are weaved in, like surprises.
Yeah.
You have to
surprise and delight.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. So these awesome surprises. And then we go from there to the Indian Ocean coast, so the Kenyan coastline, which is, Indian Ocean is year-round warm water. It's paradise, white sand beaches, azure water, place called Watamu. which has a UNESCO-protected mangrove estuary. Mm-hmm. And we stay in a place called Watamhu Treehouse, which is a hand-built treehouse tower. With the top of the treehouse tower is circular, and that's the yoga room, and it has 360-degree views of this white sand beach, which is like 2 minutes walk down.
How do you find these places?
And the mangrove estuary. So
that's your secret sauce, right?
That is. So most of the locations that the retreats are at are through trips that I've done and places I've like sought just, out and discovered. Yeah. And it's kind of like one of those things, the more you do it, the more you get a knack for like finding them. And, and it's the most exciting part of the business is being like, oh, I'm now scouting a place. And I'll like hear, put my ear to the ground, you know, and I'll hear something. Like recently I was in Zimbabwe looking for a location in Zimbabwe. And I'm looking at a place near Vic Falls. And there's this incredible lodge called Matetsi, which has got amazing, amazing mix of conservation and community experiences, as well as the Big Five. And it's at Victoria Falls. And it just like through the, you know,
that
through the airwaves,
awesome.
hear about just places that are doing something out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. And so all of the locations that the retreat are at are unique and exceptional. None of them are the run of the mill. That's not interesting to me. And that also doesn't, back to the point, inspire awe and wonder, because it's, you've seen it before, you've done it before. And so all of them are like, holy, where did, how, what?
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, we'll link up to your site and everything so people can check them out, of course. I'm ready to head to the airport right now, actually, hearing that.
Let's go to Kenya.
Let's go to Kenya. All right. Well, speaking of the business side of this, how do you, and I'm really curious about this, having start like trying to plan some retreats in Norway, and I got some thought about, you know, listeners out there, maybe we can put something together. It'd be pretty fun. All of us come together. Well, maybe not all of us, but a group of us come together somewhere and have one of these experiences together. I think it'd be really nice. So if you're interested in that, reach out, because we can organize that. How would you kind of figure out packaging this kind of thing and pricing it? And I mean, you don't have to, you know, give away all your secrets or whatever.
No.
I would imagine, I put this out on my newsletter some weeks ago. You know, it is possible, even if you're not like a travel company, if you are the organizer of a group, you can probably get your vacation or your trip paid for. And that's something I don't think a lot of travelers are maybe aware of. If you want to take the initiative and put together something, that gives you leverage if you're now calling an eco lodge or wherever you're going and saying, hey, I got like 20 people ready to come down. What can you do for us? You know, even if you're not running this as a business, it could be something to think about. So I don't know if that's off base or not, but I think it could be.
YeI think lodges, I think the travel industry, hospitality industry is more and more aware that experiential travel, group travel is growing, and a good lodge, a good hotel is already weaving into their package offering, their accommodation offering experiences, and thinking about what are unique extras to the bed and breakfast that they offer.
Right.
And so if you find a good location, they will have things that they do and excel at outside of their accommodation and food that you can leverage off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something important to consider. So whether you're planning it, or whether you are, the example you gave of like something spontaneous that's not like as a business, but maybe you have a group of people and you want to throw something together, find the right place, and they already are considering and putting together great experiences that you can leverage off. In terms of pricing, I think the important thing, so the risky thing about retreats is that it's a B2C sales vibe. So you set a date, you create the package, and then you have to cost it on what you hope to and guesstimate to in terms of numbers.
Yeah.
And that is a difficult thing.
Yeah.
First of all, you've got to be realistic. So obviously your cost price, the more people, the lower the price, obviously. But you've also got to be realistic because lodges need you to block dates, to put down deposits,
yeah,
to right. front, to front up. And so what I always do is set myself a minimum viable number that I think realistically I can get.
Yeah.
And that's what I cost it to. And that's what I commit to. And then if I exceed that, there's scope to then expand and book some more rooms, yeah. expand the number, get a bigger plane, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
But I work with realistic minimal viable numbers. And I also work hard to get an arrangement to work on relationships with the lodges and locations because over time, I want to return there. I want to create a package and then run it every year. And so I want to bring them business long term. And I try to build a relationship of trust. And that enables me then also, once that's established, to have a bit more flexibility in terms of confirming numbers and practical things, blocking rooms, blocking, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there are a lot of moving pieces. So
there are a lot of
moving
pieces.
This could be a multi-episode.
It could be because all the experiences, like a big trip like I described with Kenya, I mean, there are ground handler transfers. There are the flights. There are the lodges. Totally. I mean, it's so many moving parts to put it together. And so I also, you know, I do recognize that I will spend an entire year, not all day, every day, but bits daily, you know, like over a year of planning and logistics and putting it together for what is then 10 days of amazingness.
Yeah, right.
And that's just the nature of it. And you have to be at peace with that.
Yes.
You can't, like, I also do consulting work, and that's the way I think about that. And like, there's my hourly rate is very different to how I think about the retreat business.
Yeah, right.
You just can't.
Okay, yeah.
Just yeah, I mean,
but you like it.
But I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. And so it gives me so much value beyond a monetary. And I'm not advocating for running a business at a loss. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that to do these things, like, they take a lot of time and it's so many moving parts and logistics.
Yeah, right.
And you've just got to... Yeah.
In that way, you have to, well, I believe it's helpful to have the passion.
Helpful to have the passion and just, make sure that your bases are covered. So as I said, start realistically.
So I guess the last question would be, you know, actually getting people to come on.
Yeah.
On these things.
Yeah.
Right. You can't go on these retreats if you're not marketing and having customers.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You do things like go on some dude's podcast and, you know, whatever
stuff like
it is,
that.
And stuff
helpful.
Like that. what's working right now, I guess?
Well, one of the things that I've really seen over the years in the industry is the people that succeed in running retreats are people that have an established community. So, you know, whether it be painting retreats or running retreats, you know, whatever, group experiences, that they have an established community and they leverage off that. I've never seen somebody who didn't have an existing community and skill and thing going who then started a retreat business out of nothing, that it's been successful. Now, look, there might be, but I haven't seen that. And so... I think that's the biggest thing is you have an established a community that you're already in touch with and you say, hey, we're a community because I do XYZ or we share XYZ passion together and let's take that passion to the Swiss Alps.
Cool.
So there's that. But yes, I mean, marketing is probably the biggest headache of the business for me and the thing that I wish that I had more help with. And it is very time intensive and, you know, to put together, videos and material reels that are really professional, I mean, that takes a lot of time and money and the expectation is also very high quality and it's a lot. That takes a lot. And so that's probably the most difficult part of business. I invest a lot of time and care into SEO, super boring point, but you've got to be visible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, yeah.
I think the biggest point for me where I started seeing a big difference in traction was when I began to share my scouting trips and my like story and reasons behind choosing places.
Okay. So you mean on social media?
On social media.
Because this is a big, in the startup culture, it's about sharing the process.
Exactly.
And people, it seems like that really works. I mean, I've heard that time and time again, like when people are building tech companies, they're blogging about it, all the mistakes, the failures, the things that are happening. People do it with writing books now. They're like, you can log on and watch them write over your, you know, this kind of thing. And it really works, apparently.
Yeah.
So you're finding that works.
Definitely. I think it paints a very realistic and rich picture of the location for people. And it's exciting. Like, you know, when I recently launched the a trip in Norway for next year, and it'll be the first time I'll run it in Norway. And I went on a scouting trip there, and the whole weekend I had so many people going interacting with me about like where are you, where. And so when the launch happens, you've already done so much communication around
you're
what's
already
special.
Sort of building the hype naturally.
Exactly. And that doesn't need the professional. I mean, I'm definitely no influencer, or I'm not a professional photographer or anything, so my stuff has an authentic veneer to it, let's put it that way. But I think people appreciate that, because we can all see what a lodge shot looks like, what a pro image of a lodge looks like in the airbrushed room with the mood lighting and that sort of thing. And okay, that looks good, but what does it tell you about the experience you're going to have when you're there? And I think people are concerned with that. And then the most powerful thing is word of mouth. Undeniably.
Yeah.
So you just got to start and get going and build and build and stick with it. I'm not going to pretend like this has been easy, or it's just like, oh, I put out a retreat and it's sold out.
Yeah.
No way. I've had so many moments where I've been like, I can't go on. Like, I can't do this anymore. It's so hard. Why won't anyone buy my retreat? I've had moments, so many moments like that. But somehow I wake up the next morning, dry my eyes, wake up the next morning and keep trying.
Yeah.
And that is just any business, right? Any business, if somebody tells you running your own business or starting stuff, is like that. Like,
yeah, if you're running any business, you're going to be drying your eyes at some point.
Exactly. And just
but I mean,
choosing,
that could be for any job and anything, right?
You know? And just choosing to go on. Pick yourself up and keep going and keep building. And that's the word of mouth.
Rock on. Yeah. Going. We're just high-fiving for that one. It's firing me up over here, Nina. That sounds... I mean, I think, you know, going back to the community thing, I don't want people to get discouraged, because I think a lot of people's minds go to... Oh, I don't have 100,000 Instagram followers.
I don't.
Oh, I don't have, you know, an email list or whatever. But, you know, communities all around us. It can be as simple as starting a meetup in your hometown or your city around like a certain topic, and then just growing a community right there where you live. Like, it doesn't have to be. I just kind of want to point that out, because I feel like
so
it can
important.
Get discouraged.
Yes,
when,
and when I say community, I absolutely don't mean you're already like an egg in an Instagram celeb vibe. I mean, absolutely not. And your community could even be your coworkers, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, we're a bunch of corporate folks. We all love hiking. Let's figure something
and
out.
And I've
here.
Got an office. I work for this big corporate, and I've got an office of 400 people, and at least 20 of them. I know that they've got the budget, and I know when we all take leave. I have their personal emails, and I know they like hiking. That's a community.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, even though you got the wet eyes sometimes and all the craziness, I mean, you've been doing this for quite a long time, and you're still rocking and rolling.
Yeah, even through COVID.
We're going to be talking retreats after we get. We'll probably continue this conversation. I think we covered most of the sort of core things we wanted to cover on the retreat side of things, right? So tell me about your philosophy of life. No, I'm kidding. But now you mentioned the PhD in philosophy, and I'm just curious, what did you take from studying philosophy? What did that give you?
A love for ideas. So a love for how ideas form, and how an idea is one contained little orb. And the more you go into it, the more you see the veins and connections and patterns. And that concept of seeing something from, say, above as a whole and diving in and seeing more and more and more complexity, but then being able to zoom out and seeing simplicity and being able to recognize and articulate that simplicity, that is a theme and pattern of across the board, of nature, of the human body, everything. And that mirrors that. And what I mean is if you have like an image of a leaf from above, and it's just like the leafy shape and green block of green, and then you go in and you just see layer and layer and layer and layer of complexity, and you recognize that, and the deeper you go in, the more immersive and like overwhelming it is, and then you come out and you see the simplicity again. And the practice of philosophy, the school of philosophy is the profession of philosophy is about being able to know the detail, to immerse yourself, to be overwhelmed, to be in the detail, but then to see the overarching form in its simplicity and to articulate it in the most simple and concise way possible. I'm not a very concise person, I'm sure you've realized. Definitely err on the tangent and the detail. But that's why philosophy was actually very difficult for me, and why I stuck with it, because it forces you towards simplicity, to essence. Yeah. And in that way, it's also an art form, right? Because art is like that too.
Yeah, right.
This beauty and simplicity, mathematics is like that as well. There's a whole, there's, 600 pages in an equation, and then you put it down into four
equals
or five.
E equals MC squared. Yeah, I mean, essence is a great word. You know, we want to articulate using words the ideas, concepts, things we see, but they can't always do it justice, right? Because it's still a finite thing. Words are still a finite thing. Our ability to express them is still a finite thing. And sometimes, and some of them are constructs, right? A lot of it's like, you know, you hear about this in different cultures. It's like, well, in this culture, like this concept of beauty or what, I'm just throwing a random one out there, but. And I wish, these are the kind of things I wish I had at the top of my head, like these anecdotes where I could be like, well, in the Swahili, you know, or whatever, and like the Australian, I don't know. I don't have like an actual story, but I know that in some cultures, certain things aren't recognized as the same way they are in other cultures, or this adjective doesn't exist, or they have this thing that describes this thing.
Yeah.
And of course, that changes the thought process of the person that is within that culture.
So
there is no one universal reality, of course. But this this idea of articulating the world, interpreting it, sharing it, I mean, that's what makes people so interesting and unique, right? Because we all have these different backgrounds and we all unpack these things in different ways. And that's why I love these conversations so much.
Yeah.
And I've loved this one with you.
Yeah, I've loved it too. Absolutely. To your point about different cultures and perspectives, I mean, Give me one, please. On the west coast of South Africa, there is a community there that for them, a sign of beauty is missing front teeth in women.
There you go.
Yeah. And it's a real sign of beauty.
Yeah.
Now, in every other culture that I have come across globally, both indigenous or modern, you know, urbanized,
like
that
in urban
is not,
areas, it's a sign of meth addiction.
Yeah, exactly. it's a pretty unique sign of beauty or perception on beauty. And so when you encounter something like that, it's almost like to wrap your mind around, like, how could you possibly think that's beautiful? But it's so important to encounter those differences like that, because it underscores the point that we have a veneer or perspective on reality, and that is actually more informative than the reality itself. And the reality itself is actually being crafted and written and created through that veneer to moment.
Right.
And that's so important. Also, now these global, you know, we talk about, you know, the conflicts and the divide globally between conservative and populist views and liberal or leftist views, and these, like in the US, and these schisms in society. And at base, what you have is two groups of people saying, But I don't get it. Why don't you see what I see? You know, like, it's not, it's, why do you value that? Why don't you see what I'm telling you is valuable? Absolutely, that is just part of being human.
Yeah.
And if you grapple with it on a small or localized issue like missing front teeth, you can maybe better equip yourself to grapple with it when you're sitting across the table from someone on the other side of the political divide and you're at loggerheads. At base level, what you're saying is actually the lens that you see reality through is fundamentally different than me. And so actually reality to you is fundamentally different.
Yeah.
But we have to try and find a middle
So we all ground. Live in our own reality.
We coexist in reality, but we create a reality moment by moment that's colored by our perceptions and beliefs and previous experiences.
Mm. Some of this ties in with one thing I thought might be a loose end on the retreat side of things, because we're all perceiving things in different ways, as you just described. Yet when you bring a group together, you still have to have some kind of a process for creating a container for transformation. And just wanted to hear some advice on that.
Right. So I would say the first ingredient for that would be back to that mind-body experience. So you can't have transformation in yourself unless you're connecting with yourself.
Yeah. So adding giving people an opportunity to connect with themselves.
Yeah, and
that can be exercises.
Done in so many different ways.
Right. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Could be walks in nature.
Yeah. In your case, yoga and other things, but it doesn't have to be. Yeah.
Or exactly. There's so many different ways to achieve that. But that's got to be the foundation, is enabling people to get into their bodies.
Embodied.
Yes. And to have a flow of communication with themselves. Otherwise, it's not going to be authentic.
Yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, you're either giving them ideas or they're not in touch with their truth and their process of transformation.
Right.
So that would be absolutely the first thing. And then the second thing is creating an environment that feels safe. So going through transformation is a vulnerable thing. And a lot of us are not comfortable with sharing that or showing vulnerability or showing sides of ourselves that we're working on or that are changing or that are new. And so you have to create an environment where people feel safe and happy to be themselves. And that doesn't happen on the first day.
No. Yeah.
That happens over doing activities that are like fun and inclusive and in little ways affirming people. Yeah.
Building the trust among the group.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. Okay.
It takes time. So I would never try to have like a transformative workshop or a deeper sharing session on the first day.
Yeah.
It's just impossible. Yeah, and then I think it's creating the mind-body connect, it's creating the safety, and then it's just having something that unlocks it. So you can't just be like, okay, everyone's safe, and we're grounded, and we're just going to sit in a circle now. You know, so you've got to have some kind of like goal or somewhere you want to take them, something that's going to unlock, that's going to give the impetus or the structure for it. And that can be many different things, and you can link that to the theme of the workshop, of your retreat, or the theme of the place that you're in. Sometimes I do that, like on the hiking and yoga trips, about the metaphor of a mountain and challenges, having goals or things we're working for, which would be the peak, versus going into the mountain and seeing all of the detail and the beauty and the journey on the way. Whatever, you choose something that's like a metaphor or a container that helps guide the process. And then people will bring their own thing.
Yeah.
They will always bring, they will take what you've said, the metaphor of the mountain, mm-hmm. and make it work for them.
Yeah.
And there's got to be the space for them to do that.
Okay. You're an artist when you're putting these things together. There's a lot going on. And
that's very kind of you to say. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can tell that. And I appreciate that about you. Thank you for sharing your passion for all of this with us. And just, I'm so glad we're connected, because I'm really vibing with you. And I had a great time chatting with you. And we will snap a selfie after this, so when we can post it up with the show notes so you guys can see where we were sitting and what this whole scene looked like, which you may have heard of the busy street. Sorry about that. Things got crazy a couple times. Do you want to share, before we let you out of here one more time, just kind of any last words of wisdom, you know, maybe where people can find you if they want to connect and that sort of thing? Anything at all here?
Okay, wow. This is the first I'm really put on the spot.
Well, sorry.
Put on the spot now.
Don't take it too,
too seriously, exactly. So people can find me on my website, which is inretreat.co, and In Retreat on, just search for In Retreat on Instagram. And let's connect and share our journeys.
Yeah, very nice. Can we high five it out one more time? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To rock the mic. Take care.
Cheers.
There you go. Thank you to Nina Butler for stopping by the show, meeting up in person to do that. What a great time we had. And I love that she lives right here in Oslo, where I'm based. Check out our company, inretreat.co, if you want to learn more about some of the stuff she's doing over there. At the top, I mentioned this trivia question. How many schools of philosophy are there? Okay, this is according to Wikipedia, which had a page with a list of schools of philosophy. So I dropped them into a spreadsheet, and it turns out, as of right now at least, there are 193, according to this page. Probably more, probably less, if you look at different resources. 193. Also, you may recognize that number, the number of United Nations member states, 193. So there's the travel serendipity there. Okay. I will let you rock on with your day. I wonder, did this show inspire you today? You thinking about crafting a retreat for yourself, perhaps for others? It's a fun thing to do. I've been on retreats. I have been in those situations where I've traveled to have some kind of transformation. And, you know, I think the trick is to go in with an open mind and not put too much pressure on that transformation. Just let it come organically. That's how I'll wrap this up. The lessons that come from travel, I think they have to just flow freely to us, and we need a little time afterwards to process them. And even from my last retreat, which you might have heard on this podcast, I still am processing those lessons. So it's a never-ending thing. Let's just all enjoy the journey. Speaking of enjoying the journey, I'll leave you with a quote. Is it going to be about enjoying the journey? I don't know, because I'm pulling it out of the quote drawer, and you never know what you're going to get. Oh, okay. This one's from Yoga Bhajan, who said, "Body is not all. Mind is not all. Spirit is not all. All three make sense." That was quite serendipitous right there, pulling that one out to wrap this one up. Perfect. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Peace and love to you and yours. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.